You're listening to Teatro Mundi Live. I'm Andrea Cetrullo, Program Curator at Teatro Mundi, and this is the second episode of Hybrids, a podcast series focusing on the notion of hybridity as mixture, contamination, and symbiosis. How do apparently distinct entities, be they human or not, interact, feed from each other, and combine their individualities in order to create something entirely new? We invited four guests to answer this question through the lens of choreography, architecture, medical history, mathematics, ecology, and gastronomy. On this occasion, I am joined by Professor of Mathematics at the Universidad Nacional de Colombia, Fernando Salamea. Fernando's interest in mathematics and its applications to other disciplines such as philosophy, literature, and architecture permeate his thoughts and converge in his book, América, una trama integral, which has recently been translated into English as America, an integral weave. In his book, Fernando explores the particularities of America as a hybrid, formed by a multiplicity of creeds, ethnic groups, sensibilities, and artistic influences, which altogether form a weave or mixture, reflecting the local and the universal. We will concentrate on Latin America as an example of synthetic culture. For a long time, Latin America has occupied a marginal or a peripheral position within the established world order, a position that, far from resulting in isolationism or mimicry, blends and constructs new cosmogonies and realities. Our guest brings a rich selection of instances in which this hybridity has manifested in mathematical thought, philosophy, art, and architecture. He is interested in the relationship between the local and the universal, the pendularity, or back and forth, as he would call it, that gives rise to artists such as Frank Gehry, Anselm Kiefer, the Uruguayan artist Joaquín Torres García, and Eva Ferreira, or Colombian architect Rogelio Salmona.
Welcome, Fernando. First of all, I'd like to say that I'm really excited to have you as my guest. As a fellow Latin American and an incredible unconventional thinker who has actually been a source of inspiration for me when I conceived this series. I would like to say that I came across your work not too long ago when I found out that your book America, una trama integral, published in Spanish in 2009, would be translated and published in English very soon. This is fantastic news, as it will give the Anglophone readers the opportunity to read your work and also to familiarize themselves with the peculiarities, if you like, of Latin American thought and its idiosyncratic sensibilities, which I dare say haven't historically had a major resonance in places like England, where Teatro Mundi and myself are based. So congratulations on this, for the translation and the publication of the book. And yes, now I'd like you to elaborate on the notion of hybrids or mixtures, as you understand it, which of course is the theme of this podcast series.
So thank you, first of all, Andrea, for the invitation, and Teatro Mundi for the opportunity to talk about this and these themes. So perhaps if you want, we can begin talking about the terms themselves. Hybrid, the hybrid term coming as a kind of a combination of differences, where the crossing is particularly important. You produce an intercrossing, a fabric, a weave of differences, and they are constructed as an integral of the differences. This introduces the vastness of the world, the multiplicity of the world, this theatrum mundi with all the different shapes and possibilities, which are then combined in some kind of unity beyond the multiplicity. On the other hand, the mixture, the idea of the mixture, It's a little different, I think. The mixture tries to work with different strata, and these different strata are, in some sense, mixed, fused in a unity. But in the hybrid construction, you still see the differences. Instead, in the mixture, in one moment, the difference disappear completely. So in one sense, you have the construction of a unity which still captures the difference and the multiplicity, and in the mixture, you produce something entirely new in which the difference disappear completely. But in any case, you have here a kind of goal of trying to be a construction, an integral construction beyond the differences. So this is what I call often a kind of new differential and integral calculus for our world. Well, in the difference in our world are extremely important, but also it's something important is to integrate the differences. The postmodernism and all the constructions in which we are today inserted emphasize very much the differences and much less the integrality. I am very interested in the integrality beyond the differences, on in some kind to try to find some kind of universals beyond the locals. I think that this fight between locality and globality is also one of the main trends of our times. And since I am a mathematician, I try often to use some theoretical grounds in order to capture this fight between the local and the global. Perhaps some of the main techniques here are called category theory, in which the relational understanding of the world is fundamental. So you have this theatrum mundi, which is connected by a lot of relations, and those relations provide our knowledge of the things. The essentials disappear, and what you need is this connection, this back and forth, this understanding of the pragmata, which produces our understanding of the world. And the other one is what is called shift theory, which is a very, very interesting tool by mathematicians in the 1950s, in which you can understand very well the locality and how those localities are, in a sense, glued together to obtain some certain ideas of globalities. So beyond this back and forth between the local and the global, you see permanently appear what we may call the border or the frontier or the middle ground, the mediation. And in that sense, I want to recall a very beautiful citation by Bakhtin in 1924, where Bakhtin says, and the great cultural critic, Russian cultural critic, he says a beautiful thing. I am citing Bakhtin. Bakhtin says, every cultural act lives essentially on the boundaries, and it derives its seriousness and significance from this fact. Abstracted from these boundaries, it loses the ground on its being and becomes vacuous, arrogant, degenerates, and dies. This beautiful sentence by Bakhtin emphasizes the importance of being in the border, the frontier, beyond the center. And that I think is very important for our Latin American condition. We are in principle in the border, but being in the border is not a hindrance. On the contrary, being in the border provides us the capacity to look at the center and come back from the center and construct something new in the margin. Instead, if you are completely in the center, you cannot see the border. From the border, you can see the center and come back. Instead, it doesn't happen. So I think that this condition to be being in the border or in the margin is extremely interesting for us. And this is perhaps why Nestor Garcia Canclini in the 1990s invented the name hybrid cultures, as culturas híbridas. He was one of the main thinkers of this, this kind of breeding and crossing of Latin America. And using the condition of being Latin American in the border, far from the center, and all the time crossing the different perspectives was something that for Garcia Canclini was kind of characteristic of Latin America. Mm-hmm. And I think, it is true, and there is a long tradition from the 20th century where this kind of transition, constant back and forth between the different levels of the world, the statum mundi with all the relationships connected, is something that the Latin Americans can see with some kind of sensibility, which is very interesting.
Yes, this is really interesting. And I would like us to return to this point a little bit further down the conversation. But bringing us back to this concept that you were talking about of locality and universality. I've recently finished your book, Ariadna y Penélope, Redes y Mixturas en el Mundo Contemporáneo, which translates more or less as to English as Ariadna and Penelope, webs, meshes, networks in the contemporary world. This is up to you. What word do you think would fit best? Because as you know, in English, there are these different interpretations or translations. I leave this to you. But what I was going to say is that the premise of this book, as I understood it, is to build connections between phenomena and the apparently distinct components that make up our universe. And this requires focusing on the particular or singular without isolating it from the universal. So could you tell us how one could perhaps cultivate a more holistic spirit in times when there seems to be a hyper focus, as you rightly mentioned before, on identity or identity politics and the specialization of knowledge? How could one perhaps apply these principles to one's, you know, everyday life?
Yes, that's an extremely deep and difficult question to answer. In my very poor English, usually the mathematicians we think in visual terms. So usually with images, I can try to explain things. It's much more difficult to do it with the spoken language, and much more difficult in English. I speak in Spanish and usually I see things, and now I am trying to speak and don't see anything. Yes. So it's a very difficult question, but a good way to think about that would be perhaps to emphasize the change of logics. We usually think in our everyday life in logics which are very exclusive, in which things are or things are not, to be or not to be, the famous construction. That's called in logic a classical logic, in which you have only two possibilities. And we try to be very polarized, usually in our everyday life. And if we try to fight against that polarization and against that exclusion, and we think in logics which are much more continuous or more flexible and plastic, then we would be able to go beyond the particulars. The particulars usually are very exclusive. If you are in a locality very much defined, and it excludes the other. When you introduce a definition, then you exclude the other things which are outside. That happens when you go to the locality very deep, or that happens when you go to the particular very deep. Instead, if you try to escape a little from the particular and you abstract the things, then you got some correlations that in the particularities you lose. that's the interest of abstracting and going beyond the mere locality. And in that exercise, to go beyond our usual exclusions in our everyday life, then we have to change logics. And we have a lot of very interesting logics which are much more flexible and plastic than the classical logic. These are called the intuitionistic logic, topological logic, multivalued logic, etc. There are a lot of ways of thinking in mathematics, in logic, but which can be extended to the culture in general, to the multiplicity of our understanding of the world. So if we escape from the taxonomies, and we introduce some kind of nice correlations and plasticization of the world, then we will be able to compare the restricted localities with something much more plastic in the globality. So the back and forth between the two is an exercise that we must do, but we must do that also in our very particular daily life.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm actually constantly, when I read your books, fascinated as I skim through the pages by the connections and analogies, shall we say, that you draw between mathematics, logics, and the arts, which clearly distance themselves, as you were just describing, from the more analytic tradition represented by, you know, philosophers like the well-known Bertrand Russell. So yeah, making mathematics much more approachable, intuitive, and somehow true to life, if I may say. So could you give us some more concrete examples of how mathematical thinking can be a useful tool, not only to think the world, but also to make world?
For example, you could. This is an example of one of my masters in thought in general in logic, which is called Charles Sanders Peirce. Peirce was an American philosopher of the 19th century, one of the forerunners of logic in modern times. First had a very nice example in which you have an ink and you drop on a white paper and a black ink. So you try to understand what is happening there. You quickly see that in that ink, that black ink in the paper, you have parts of the paper which are completely black, parts of the paper which are completely white, but in the border you have this notion in which the points have neighborhoods which are at the same time black and the same time white. Mm-hmm. So with this simple example of action of a color on another color, You see already that you have to escape from the idea of interior and exterior, and you have to look at the border, the frontier, mm-hmm. where we began this conversation, the importance of the frontier. So when you think about this simple idea, the frontier and the triadicity of the world is immediate. You have at least to think triadically all the time. Escape from interior and exterior and look at the border. So that in our this is a very simple logical mathematical example, that in our world has a lot of consequences, because when you have to do a decision, then you will think probably in one or another possibilities, but in fact you, with this kind of reasoning, you will think, oh no, perhaps this is not wrong, the other one is wrong, I should think more and more and more, and that opens the dialogue. Mm-hmm. This conversation, for example, in general, the conversations are open to the possibility, to several possibilities. This openness of conversation is something that is already clear in the mathematical beginning of our world. Our world is very open mathematically, and that openness of mathematics is something which also could guide us in our daily decisions.
Mm-hmm. And this is expressed in the continuum, would you say, the concept in mathematics?
Yes, completely so. And the interest of the continuum is also this kind of ramified understanding of the things. A continuous logic is a logic which is called a topological logic or an intuitionistic logic, in which the intuition is particularly important, and which goes beyond the idea of just cutting the things. Mm-hmm. Beyond the cuts, you have something continuous, or also in the images of the film theory, beyond the cuts of the film, then you have this kind of continuity of the film, which produces the good understanding beyond just the cuts of the photographs or the images, which are, in a sense, hindered and separated. Mm-hmm. Beyond separation, continuity provides a connection, an abstract connection, and that abstract connection should be a kind of learning for us in our lives. Instead of separating ourselves from different worlds, we should connect ourselves. This is what you are doing, in fact, in Teatro Mondi, in your hybrids perspective. And this kind of idea is an idea of being tolerant enough, I think. If you there is a political tolerance which is important there, in which you can really understand the other.
Perhaps what I'm alluding to is a certain atmosphere or environment or climate that kind of cancels any sort of thought or opinion that is not politically correct. I think this is a very interesting kind of way of thinking about the world, which, you know, is more sort of like a spectrum than a category, as saying like you're left or you're right, you're either one or the other, or you are this thing or the other, or the emphasis on words. That would be another example that comes to mind, which kind of deters or takes away from the more sort of discrete nuances of life, which might be ineffable in themselves.
That's extremely interesting. And perhaps we could profit also from the Latin Americans again. So we can bring in the conversation to Carlos Vaz Ferreiro, a fellow Uruguayan from your country, which was one of the very, very interesting and very important masters of Latin American thought at the beginning of the 20th century. Vaz Ferreira invented something very nice, which he called the razonabilidad, because in Spanish, razón means reason, and sensibilidad means sensibility. When you glue reason and sensibility together in a continuum, then you get the word razonabilidad. Razona, razón, glued with sensibilidad makes razonabilidad. So in the razonabilidad of Vaz Ferreira, you have the gluing of reason and sensibility, or in terms of Pascal, the gluing of reason and heart. And the famous phrase of Pascal, the heart has its reasons that reason doesn't know anything about, that beautiful sentence. Beyond that, you have this kind of idea of Vaz Ferreira, that you have to construct a continuous understanding beyond reason and heart, beyond the intelligibility and sensibility. There is something, a continuum there. And if you have a continuum there, then you are beyond the usual polarities. you cannot say politically this is wrong, this is bad, this is fine, this is correct. This kind of entirely absurd construction that in which we are today living, in which this canceling culture is completely eliminating the dialogue. Mm-hmm. We are interested, particularly here, particularly in your program, in the idea of conversation, dialogue, in which we should be able to express ideas and combine ideas to produce these hybrids of ideas, which are really fundamental. And in that sense, the razonabilidad of Bas Ferreira is a hybrid, is a very profound hybrid in which reason and heart are blended together.
Yeah, so bringing us back to Latin America now, and you mentioned the center and the margin. And from my experience recently being in Athens, for example, I was speaking to many Greek people who knew quite a lot about Montevideo and Uruguay, where I'm from, mm-hmm. much more so than any British person that I could, you know, encounter on a normal day. So I was thinking also about how, you know, these peripheral, if you want to call them, countries are always united by a same sort of like sentiment, which is also difficult to express into words. And one could talk about it historically, et cetera, but I think there's something more to it, which is, you know, is a kind of sensibility or awareness that comes through not being in the center of things, yeah. as you rightly mentioned at the beginning of this conversation. So I think your work, you know, marvelously illuminates or sheds light on the many, many cultural producers that Latin America has given rise to in the past two centuries mainly. And some of them are less known than others, like Bas Ferreira, who you just mentioned, or the Colombian architect Rogelio Salmona. So yeah, I was wondering if you could walk us through some of their works and tell us why they are relevant to the discussion we're having.
Okay. For example, the case of Rogelio Salmona, since you were talking about Athens and the Greek culture, is extremely interesting. Rogelio Salmona is an architect, Colombian architect of the mid-century. He was a direct student of Le Corbusier. And but here in Colombia, he tried to invent a hybrid, precisely, or a mixture, extremely interesting, in which he came back to the Greek ideals, the kind of very geometrical understanding of architecture, using spheres, using a lot of geometrical figures of the Greeks, but at the same time, hybrid, producing a mixture and a hybridization of that pure form of the Greeks with the pre-Hispanic tradition that we had in America. So in Salmona, you have this kind of extremely geometric and very, very clean construction coming from Le Corbusier, but that is connected with this pre-Hispanic traditions of fabrics, which are extremely fine in their constructions, and in which you have a lot of weaving beyond the cleanness of the general structure. You have a lot of very, very specific constructions related more, for example, to the quipus in the Incas, or things which are very, very extremely concrete in their weaving compared with the general Greek idea of the clean spheres. Mm-hmm. So in Salmona, you have this back and forth between the abstract geometrical construction coming from the Greeks and the Corbusier, and this incorporation of this long pre-Hispanic tradition in which the fabric is particularly important. So Salmona is a good example of this hybridization that you were talking about. And we have a lot of examples, in fact, in Latin America, in which this kind of hybrids appear in what I would say in a natural way. It's not something artificial. It's very natural because the very essence of being Latin American is to be a hybrid in a sense, as you are a good example.
Now I would like to talk a little bit more about other architects, the work of the architect Frank Gehry, sculptor Anselm Kiefer as well. All of these works powerfully, I would say, capture the human experience, and they also draw on history, mythology, literature, philosophy, and science. Why did you choose to focus on these particular figures, and what is their connection to the notion of hybridity that we've been discussing?
The why is, it's a good question that I don't know the answer. Why did I came to them? Probably it's sensibility. When you are confronted with Kiefer, to say one example, the big canvases and the big installations of Kiefer, you are completely surrounded by this kind of extreme complexity of the world. This very, very difficult understanding of history with all the shadows of history. And at the same time, you have some kind of hope for humanity. The hope is produced by the creativity of the artist, but the artist is inserted in a middle, in a context in which everything is terrible and hard. And so this kind of fight that Kiefer has with the world. And again, coming for Kiefer, also the romantics are extremely important. So this fight between the self and the world in Kiefer is something which strikes me a lot. So this kind of constant desire of going beyond the hard conditions in which the humans live, and to produce some kind of great creativity beyond the hindrances that in which we live, is something which is very powerful and strikes me a lot. And in the case of Gehry, something also similar, also in the sense that Gehry is inventing, really, with the Guggenheim in Bilbao, he was inventing an entirely new way of seeing architecture. No, nothing similar was ever imagined before Gehry.
I would like you to develop a little bit more this concept that reappears in your books, that is the pendulum. And you have mentioned it during this conversation, back and forth, which I believe would be an equivalent of the pendulum. Yes. What makes America, and more concretely, you already touched upon it, but more concretely, Latin America, a distinct region in this sense? Why is the back and forth and the pendulum so relevant to describe the experience of Latin America?
Perhaps we can introduce also Joaquín Torres García, the great painter of Uruguay, again, in homage to you and to Latin America in general. Joaquín Torres García produced a very beautiful construction, which he called the North is the South, in which he inverted Latin America. He produces a diagram of Latin America and inverts the diagram. And in this inversion, the North becomes the South. The usual North, the construction, the usual idea of what is the goal? The goal is go to the North. No, the goal now is to construct the South. In the South, you will produce something different, a new superposition of the strata. And in this new superposition of the strata, things will become entirely different. And Torres García did that with a lot of care in something which is called the Universalismo Constructivo de Torres García. It's a gigantic book of 1,000 pages in which Torres García tries to construct systematically this idea of producing the universal from the local, from the local constructions in Uruguay or from the pre-Hispanic tradition that we have in America Latina. In that sense, you produce an inversion, which is extremely interesting for doubt in general. And in America, this continuous inversion is something which is interesting for the development of our thought. Many of the most interesting thinkers in America Latina try to produce this inversion. They invert the terms, they invert the conceptions, they invert the images, and in those inversions, then you get new perspectives from Latin America. In that inversion, the pendulum is interesting because in the pendulum, you are constantly going back and forth, as I was saying, between something and its opposite. And what is interesting are not the polarities, but what happens in the middle of the pendulum. In the middle of the pendulum appear the hybrids, the mixtures, the mediations, and those mediations are, in a sense, then the some part of the characteristics of our continent to be constantly looking at those mediations, the what are called the maestros de America, Pedro Enrique Sureña or Alfonso Reyes or Francisco Romero, or Mariano Picon Salas insisted a lot on the capacity of America Latina in producing synthesis, the synthesizing capacity of the Latin American. And that synthesis needs the pendulum. To synthesize, you need the opposites and to be able to live in the middle, to really live in a sense, in a very corporeal sense. You live in a middle which, in a sense, helps you to think. There is a strange connection that you were saying very good with the sense, with the texture, in which we cannot explain it completely with rational words, but in which living in the Latin American world produces you the capacity to sense these kind of hybrids. And another person which is extremely interesting is Pavel Florensky. Florensky was a philosopher and a mathematician and art critic from in Russia in the beginning of the 20th century. Florensky did a lot of very interesting work. It has been translated a lot in French and Italian, but in other languages he is less known. In English he is less known, in Spanish almost not known. Florensky insisted very much on something which he called the inverted perspective. Inverted perspective is again the idea of an inversion in which following the usual perspective, rational perspective of the people of the Renaissance, in which you try to produce in a plane a construction of three dimensions projected on the plane. Florensky insisted in something very different that happened in the icons in the Russian tradition, in which you have a lot of different ideas and concepts which were blended together in the icon, breaking completely the usual laws of perspective. The usual traditional Occidental perspective doesn't allow to put together different contradictions. Instead, the Russian iconic tradition helps and allows us to work in a world in which you have very different perspectives blended together. That blended together, it was very important for Brodensky, and he did a systematic analysis of the iconic tradition in Russia, and use that to explain us that in the world the antinomies and the contradictions were fundamental. The usual analytical tradition or more Anglo-Saxon tradition doesn't allow us to have contradictions because if we are contradictory, then we cannot.
It's invalid.
Invalid. Yeah. Instead, Brodensky insisted that the contradiction was fundamental for our world and was part of our very human condition.
Yes, this idea of contradiction is fascinating. I mean, I think it's something I think of on a daily basis, just through everything I do or think, you know, trying to correct myself and my mental processes and say, you know, the fact that it's a contradiction, we're so indoctrinated to believe that it's invalidated, as I said. But yeah, no, it happens. And I think also through the Anglo-Saxon, the way you have to express or expose things a lot of the time, and these language barriers, right, where perhaps it's not just a sensibility, but also a sort of syntactical almost difference. And so I was thinking about how, as you mentioned, syntheses, I in the more spiritual aspect of icons as well, or perhaps I'm sort of, you know, deducting from it that you were talking about spiritualism, but I was just thinking about how in secular societies, you know, these contradictions are, there's no room for these contradictions. Well, if I think about syncretism as an example in Latin America, mm-hmm. with different religions, I've been fascinated recently by the figure of Pombagira. I don't know if you're familiar with Pombagira. So
no.
she is this spiritist figure that came from West African religions, the Orishas. But she is not one of the official ones in the pantheon. So she's not, you know, the equivalent of a Virgin Mary or anything like that. She's like the goddess of the underworld. So she inhabits the crossroads and cemeteries and places where things are transient and come together and contradict. You know, you can express anything you want. You can tell her, confess anything you want, and she will be there for you. She will listen.
Fantastic.
And this is a... And is I know.
Yeah.
And I couldn't imagine this in any other kind of like Abrahamic sort of tradition, really. This is so specific in a way to the syncretism of Latin America.
Yes, I think we could finish around that.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you so much, Fernando, for your time, for your kindness. And also for, you know, making the effort to do this in another language that is not the one that you're probably most comfortable in. So I appreciate that a lot.
Thank you, Andrea, and good luck.